Good evening, and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm Linda Calhoun, Vice Chair of the Club's International Relations Forum, and your chair for today. We also welcome our listening audience, and we invite everyone to visit us online at commonwealthclub.org. And now, it's my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speaker. Cindy Seed is a recognized world's leading authority on business protocol and social etiquette and has appeared on ABC's Good Morning America, CBS's Eye on America, Fox's Trading Spouses, HGTV's Party at Home, and the Discovery Channel's Picture This. Major companies including Hewlett-Packard Worldwide, Sprint International, Ernst & Young, Hilton and Marriott Hotels, and the Miss Universe pageant trust her to train their employees to avoid social faux pas that could lead to major business and political blunders. As founder of Advanced Etiquette with offices in China and India, Cindy travels the world to train senior executives, business professionals, and mainline employees to overcome fears and insecurities to gain poise, confidence, and authority in all business and social situations anywhere in the world. Cindy is the etiquette expert for Staples.com and has appeared in numerous media outlets, including USA Today and China Daily. She's also authored three books, with the second being the number one bestseller on Amazon.com. And each month, over 8,000 subscribers worldwide receive her Etiquette Tip of the Month e-newsletter filled with useful information for every aspect of life. As the first Asian graduate of both the equivalent Harvard and Stanford schools of etiquette, which is the Protocol School in Washington, D.C., and Emily Post Institute, Cindy has earned their highest levels of certifications, including being a certified international protocol officer level one. Cindy lives in San Anselmo with her husband, Ron Hildebrand. Please join me in welcoming Cindy Seed.
The goops, they lick their fingers, and the goops, they lick their knives. They spill their broth on the tablecloth. Oh, they lead such disgusting lives. The goops, they talk while chewing, and fast and loud they chew. So that's why I'm glad I'm not a goop. Are you? So how many of you are here to learn how not to be a goop tonight? Good, everyone. Thank you. Well, it is my pleasure to be here tonight to talk about an important topic of dining around the world and how other cultures eat and dine, that actually it's really all about what Confucius says. All people are the same, it's only their habits that are different. And that really is the only thing that sets us all apart from one another. I'm going to try and... Okay. So take a look at this. It may be a little difficult to view right now, but you're going to be seeing, you see these little yellow dots. Who can tell me what these yellow dots represent? Got any clue? Vibrations? Lights? Okay. Flights, absolutely, they are flights, to the point of you can see down in the lower right-hand corner, it is a video that you can even download off of YouTube. It is showing all of the flights that are flying around the world 24/7. So I thought I would start this evening by saying we are in a global economy where everyone is flying all everywhere around the world, to the point that we are dining one day with knives and forks, perhaps the next day using chopsticks, and then the third day someplace using your hands only. So tonight's talk, I think, is all about the fact that I encourage all of you to have fun mastering all three styles. So you could be blindfolded and then just plunk down anywhere in the world and you'll be able to enjoy a meal. It is today's trend in our global economy to establish oneself in the world. One does all one can to seem established there already. As Le Rochefoucauld, please forgive me. Who speaks French?
And
Rochecoult. Yes, I used to know how to pronounce it, and all of a sudden, I'm reeling. So, that aside from establishing yourself in the world, what's really important is the aspect of knowing certain things and then displaying them. And we can all understand displaying certain skills is much more important than just knowing them. So show of hands, just real quickly, in terms of using knives and forks, which is the most common here, one at a time, who can tell me what are the top three no-nos you know you should not do when you're dining at a dining table, a Western dining table?
Raise your hand.
Yeah. Anybody? Raise your hands. Come on.
Start from the inside out with your flatware.
Start from the inside out with your flatware. What else? These are little faux pas, no-nos, you know, the kinds of things that your mother or your Aunt Sarah used to slap your hand for doing at the dining table. And you're teaching your kids, grandkids, these things.
Elbows on the table.
No elbows on the table. That's what I was looking for. Okay, what else? Yes. Eat with your mouth open. Yes. Okay, and one more. What is it? Okay. Usually it's related to eating with your mouth or talking with your mouth full. How about that one? So how many of you already knew these three items before you walked into the room tonight? Absolutely. Everyone's raising their hands. So it is a testament to the saying that two things do determine success. It's not what you know, but also how well you communicate what you know, and often the second is more important than the first. So as we go through again this presentation tonight, if I do say something such as, oh, no elbows on the table, and your brain says, oh yeah, I know that, that's terrific. Pat yourself on the back, you know, be proud that you do know it. But I need you to also ask in the silence of your brain, how well and on a regular and consistent basis do I really display the skill that Cindy's talking about? Isn't that where the rubber meets the road? So that's just a little wake-up call for you. And if you can answer it that, gee, you know, I do it most of the time well, but I guess I could use some reminders. Or if it's something that's, gosh, you know, I've never really thought about doing that. If you have a question on it, please feel free to ask that question to help you remember. Okay. So tonight's presentation's formatted in this way, that we are going to talk about how to eat with your hands, your chopsticks, and Western flatware, as it is often called. And basically, I've divided into a little bit of a history of each of them, the proper usage, and eight little tips of table manners for each of the styles. So that's how we're going to do it, and we'll have questions and wrap up. I do encourage questions throughout, so feel free. However, in the interest of time, and she'll come around with the mic, may have to cut you off, so please forgive me. And I'll be here afterwards for a little while if you are at all interested in continuing the discussion. I'll be here. Okay, so let's move on. We all know history tells us that the prehistoric man, the caveman, they all ate with their hands. And then slowly they invented a knife and were able to cut things to eat. And they even discovered fire and were able to start cooking things. So that made eating a lot easier for the cavemen. But believe it or not, things didn't really happen all that quickly to the point. It really wasn't until the 1500s that a knife and fork was invented. But next, of course, we know was the spoons were invented in the interim. Again, by the cavemen to get more liquids. But by the, so over time, we know that the next thing is eating with our hands. Everyone eats with their hands throughout the world. And over time, we've developed certain norms of eating. And the most prevalent brought into modern time is eating in Middle Eastern countries, Muslim cultures, and India. I have not traveled to the Middle East, but I have traveled, as you know, to India and had fun learning how to eat with my hands, with my right hand, especially because I'm left-handed. So it was quite a fun experience, you know. And luckily it was with hands and not even with chopsticks, because I have quite a time with that. So as the Indians say, eating food with your hands feeds not only the body, but also the mind and the spirit. And eating is all about maximizing the flavor and texture of the food. It is believed that by being able to touch the food, it gives you a better connection to where it came from. And it's all very customized to your own taste in terms of which ingredients and foods that you might choose to mix together. So how it tastes within your own palate may be totally different than your next door neighbor who has the same plate of ingredients. So that's the fun, I think, of dining in this style of a cuisine, because don't we all like eating what we like to eat the most? So you don't have to worry as much when being served a middle, you know, an Indian type of meal. Okay. So just to give you an idea of what the 8 tips are that I've been able to overall glean from dining in this style is, number one, obviously, you have to wash your hands. And mostly in India, you do wash your hands prior to taking a seat. However, in many Middle Eastern cultures, you'll get the big bowl, and you'll be seated, and the server will come by with a big brass bowl of sorts, and then you'll put your hands in over the brass bowl, and they'll pour water over them for you to wash your hands right at the table and to dry them. So either way, obviously, that's one of the most important skills. And eating with your right hand only, that's pretty universal within any culture that eats with their hands. It's only with the right hand. Anyone know why historically this has come about? Yes, sir. Yes, the gentleman says he thinks it's because of the toilet and the left hand. In my way of saying it, yes, it's pre-toilet paper. So overall, yes, you will eat with your right hand only, but you may use your left hand to drink from a glass, because obviously your right hand is all dirty with your food. The left hand otherwise is kept underneath the table. So that is similar to how Americans dine. You usually dine with the fork in your right hand, and the left hand is underneath the table. But other than that, in many cultures too, nowadays with globalization, I've been finding that many people are keeping both hands on top of the table as well, even in this style of dining. You'll primarily in this style of dining only use the first couple of segments of your hands. And God forbid that you use your whole hand and all the food is underneath here into the palm of your hand. You're really, you know, a barbarian when you're eating with your whole hand. So I know it's hard to see, but then this kind of shows that he's only got his first couple of sections of his hand. And he's using his thumb. So that when you're eating in this style, you put the food on your fingers and you'll eat from your fingers, but you never lick your fingers and never put your fingers in your mouth, and you use your thumb to push the food into your mouth. So overall, it's in a diagonal kind of a situation. If everybody wants to try, please feel free to put your 3 fingers up. Pretend you have a nice ball of rice with all kinds of wonderful gravy, and you'll use your thumb to kind of push it into your mouth. And that's, yep, pretty much how you eat in this style. Never lick your fingers, as I said, and put your fingers in your mouth. And never, obviously, put this hand into the common plate. So the whole nowadays, they either give each person a larger plate, similar to what you saw on the previous slide here, of all of your own ingredients and so forth unto yourself. So even if you did dig in with your fingers, it's your own, which is fine. It's not as common, I found, to have larger dishes. And if they do, nowadays they do use spoons to serve. So this, I highly encourage you. We live in the wealth of the Bay Area of wonderful restaurants that serve these styles of meals. So, again, please, I encourage you to go out there, and even though they give you a fork, tell them. Because a couple of times I've been to Indian restaurants, and And even though there's a fork in front of me, my husband and I will say, oh, we're going to practice what we learned in India. Or you can say, I'll practice what I learned in class, you know, and not use the fork at all and enjoy the meal. And you'll seem so savvy. Okay. So, okay. So the next thing, though, we have that was finally invented, but invented so long ago, like 1200 BC, was the chopsticks. And even way back then, they weren't really used for the dining table. They were made of metals like bronze and so forth, and used primarily in the kitchen. However, by the time it became 480 AD, it did become a regular staple at the dining table. And historically, within the Chinese culture especially, the chopsticks were never pointed or sharp in any way, partly because, as in all cultures, you never want to bring knives or something sharp to the dining table, you know, as an indicator of stabbing somebody or whatever. So they're typically more blunt. So it became more the fashion that everything was cut up for you prior to service. And then by 1878, so it was quite a long time ago, that Japan finally decided to put, you know, chopsticks into little paper holders as you have in front of you. And interestingly enough, today, a lot of chopsticks are made in the U.S., and exported back to China. Does everybody know even from what state that is? Has anybody heard? Okay, I think it is, you know, actually it's North or South Carolina, somewhere like that, over on the East Coast. And that's because of the types of trees are so plentiful here that make the best chopsticks to be brought back there that is less plentiful. So let's see how we're going to do with chopsticks. Who is willing to admit they don't use chopsticks? Okay, that's a few of you, and the rest of you in varying levels and forms, I'm sure. So why don't we all take out our chopsticks? This is for you to keep. It's my little gift to each of you, because I'm really all here about having you, when you leave here today, start really thinking about having fun with all three of these styles of eating. Okay. Okay. There are many ways that I've seen people use chopsticks, but the one thing that's really important to keep in mind is that the proper use of chopsticks is all about the use of proper pressure points, to the point that your bottom finger, and I'm doing this with my left hand and consider it a mirror image of yours, is that you'll do it with your fourth finger, not the third. I've seen so many people use the third finger on the lower chopstick. I'm going to suggest that you use the fourth finger, and you tuck the chopstick in the web of your hand with your thumb pressing firmly against that lower chopstick. Okay? So what it leaves is that a very tight and taut kind of a stance. Let me feel yours. Yeah, pretty good. Yeah, so feel mine. See, it's really tight. You can't wiggle it or move it in any way. Then, as you might hold a pencil, you take the upper chopstick and then insert it in between your index finger and your third finger. So this gives you the best leverage and the best ability to maneuver up and down. See, when a person does the third finger style and the lower chopstick, there's just really little or no ability to manipulate that chopstick. So it really has to be this fourth finger that's on the lower chopstick so you get the best up and down. Yes, ma'am? Oh, absolutely, we have more chopsticks. Where did I... Okay. No, anyone that does not have chopsticks, I brought 90 of them. So, and I know there's not 90 of you in here. So, no, my pleasure. Great. So, many people think also, when they're fairly new, is that they want to hold the chopstick way down here like this. To me, that's really more advanced style when you're really trying to get a particular item that's all the way across the table and pre-Lazy Susan age. But most comfortably, I find it better in the middle. Okay. Again, you don't ever want it to be too low because then you have little or no range of motion with that chopstick. So overall, right here in the middle is pretty much the best way. So, and it's kind of a, if you see here, it's kind of arched, so not even flat, which I see a couple of you are doing more the flat style. And that's tough, too. So you want it a little bit more rounded. And what I'm doing here is generally a no-no. Never tap your chopsticks on the table or your plate. But you do need to have them even. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the different styles of etiquette dining with chopsticks. So you really should always have them even. And as I was saying, you never tap the chopsticks on the table or on your plate. So then you say, well, how in the heck am I going to get them even, you know, if they end up like this? Okay? Pretty much you discreetly and quietly, as you're eating, even them up in your mouth, okay? It's the best way that I do it, is just put them in your mouth quietly and just, you know, even them up with your tongue. When you are putting your chopsticks down, please never put them vertically, like at 12:30. That's more ceremonial. You'll find them in Chinese burial kinds of displays and so forth. So rather, whenever you have to put your chopsticks down, either use the little chopstick holder if you have one, or you might place them more diagonally, just slightly, across your bowl or across your plate. Dropping your chopsticks is considered bad luck. Pointing your chopsticks is considered rude. So even though you may be of a culture that talks with your hands and all of that, you know, just try to avoid from pointing at any of these things. The other thing, too, try not to stick your chopsticks straight into the bowl. That, again, is more ceremonial, as in prayer and with jaw sticks, that you might see, you know, vertical things sticking out of your rice bowl. So that's not to be done either. And overall, you never, you know, historically you may see a lot of families. If you go to a very ethnic Chinese restaurant, you'll see family members using the same side they ate out of to get something from the main dish. It is rarely done anymore, even among families, obviously because of germs and who knows what. So the only other thing you could do is turn your chopsticks upside down and use the back side of it. But in many situations now, again, we have serving spoons or serving chopsticks. But the main thing to remember is never use the side that you're eating out of to get something from the main dish. And the other thing that really burns me up is that, in fact, I led a group of people, 37 people last year to China on a two-week trip, which was really great for most of them. It was their first trip to China. And even though I gave them a sheet very similar to this, plus a few other table manners, the thing I found, okay, they remembered this side thing, but then they started picking through the dish to find the one little piece they really liked or wanted. So that is never to be done. In fact, the Chinese really think that when you are digging through the dish to find it, it's like digging your own grave, if you want to think of that as an analogy. But instead, I would use, you know, your eyes, let your eyes do the walking, so to speak. You know, just stare at the plate throughout, you know, and kind of eyeball and zero in on the one bite that you may want on that dish is the best choice. But Chinese table manners, I think, you know, because it is more prevalent in our area, take the lead. There are so many other things we'll talk about later that are very similar, but these are the things I would say are the most unsimilar. A question was about slurping or making noises with eating. Well, within the Asian culture, they love making noise. So if you're in China, please feel free. Because you want to slurp the soup because it is perceived that the hotter the broth, the better, the more fresh it is. But And the way to cool it, like with noodles and everything, is to kind of suck up and slurp up, and then it cools it as it comes into your mouth. But obviously in most Western and even modern culture, people aren't slurping anymore, okay, or making noises. Again, you know, saying how great this food is, I have to say I have a relative, very close relative, I see every year at our family Chinese New Year banquet, and I have to admit I avoid sitting next to him, you know, because, you know, he has a style of, you know, and again, this is culturally, wow, this food is so good, it's so tasty, you know, I just want to, you know, make the sound so it's tasting so delicious. And again, there are many other cultures that have these historical kinds of styles of eating and etiquette, but today, pretty much, you know, if I may step back and just say what I love about what I do now, I don't have to be as concerned about how to act if I'm going to Japan, how to act or China or Africa, Europe or South America. We're all kind of coming together. And what is emerging is international, universal business protocols, which is my focus. And along with that is coming international social etiquette as well. So down to the point that everyone shakes hands today. Sure, you might add the extra bow, you know, when you are in Japan or China and Asia. You know, you might do the namaste as well along. But again, people are shaking hands everywhere. And as well as most, if you can adhere to what we're sharing today in terms of the three styles of eating, you're going to be fine. Okay. So along the way then, it wasn't until the early 1500s. So that's a heck of a long time, if you think about it, from the time, you know, chopsticks were first introduced in Asia and primarily used. Meanwhile, you think about everyone here and throughout the world, we were just still eating with our hands, with a knife and a spoon, spearing that meat. You know, we have lots of photos in my full-blown history of dining, of people in the medieval times. If you've ever been to the Renaissance Pleasure Fair and seen some of the ways that they're eating and, you know, gnawing away at that big turkey leg and so forth, you know, that it wasn't until 1500s that an Italian blacksmith forged the first fork for the dining table. Prior to that, there had been forks used, again, primarily in the kitchen, as turning forks, but never one at the dining table. So finally, when he invented it, and you can see the style here, they primarily had two prongs, okay, and they were totally flat. If you look at these, it wouldn't have mattered if you faced this fork this way or faced it the other way. They were totally flat in those days. So now you know where that term flatware comes, because people have always said, why do they call this stuff flatware when it's all very curved that we have? Well, now you know. So when people first started using knives and forks, most people's hands were right-handed. So naturally they ate, you know, with their right hand and so forth. Then when it came time to cut something, they said, oh, you know, I'm used to cutting with my right hand again, so I guess I'll switch the fork to my left hand, cut, you know, one or two bites or so with my knife, and then I'll switch back and eat the other way. So, oh, before that, let me just say this. It was only after the fork was designed that the very first etiquette book globally was written, and primarily to teach children their table manners, and it was done by Erasmus in 1530, and here's one quote. It says, take care to cut and clean your fingernails before dining. Otherwise, dirt from under the nails may be in your food. So you got to be careful in terms of that, and that actually was prior to knives and forks. This was when you were eating with your hands still. Okay, another slide just for historical purposes. Many people ask about the different terminology that we use in etiquette. So it wasn't until Louis XIV that coined the word etiquette. And it was because he had the palaces of Versailles. Has anyone ever been there, had the pleasure? Yeah, a lot of you. Me too, just about 4 years ago. And it was wonderful. And people used to trample the grounds of the of Versailles. So he would finally put out a little edict, a little sign that says the etiquette. And written on the sign was how you were supposed to behave while walking the grounds of Versailles. Later on, he would even put them on the backs of invitations. It would be called La Etiquette. And then that would be your guideline on how you to behave in courtly manners, the balls and everything that you would go to. So that's how we actually came to be having that word etiquette. But yet, etiquette only came after another word that even preceded it, called protocol. Now, protocol is a word that has been used for centuries, and it was actually first, in a way, invented by the Romans and the Chinese on the proper way to behave in court or in general. And I have a slide that is showing some Sanskrit that was from the days of Phaotip, and it says, "When he laughs, you laugh." Meaning when the king laughs, you better laugh. So that was the first one of the first recorded tablets of etiquette way back when. And the Chinese, of course, used it quite heavily in the palace. And it's come through time. And we use the word protocol today. And all the diplomatic arenas, how the UN behaves and all of that. And then it became into the IT protocols. And they're using the term correctly, because a lot of people interchange the word etiquette and protocol, and they're very distinctively different, because etiquette can evolve through time and from country to country, as we've already discovered, right? It's fine to slurp your soup in China, but God forbid you should be dining with the Queen Mother that you should remain silent. So it changes through time. We know here in the United States there were so many things that were done, say, at the turn of the century through the Victorian era of men tipping their hats, women wearing gloves, having the fan etiquette. In fact, I just gave a whole hour talk on fan etiquette and glove etiquette, handkerchief etiquette, all of these things that came out of the Victorian time when things were quite much more conservative, shall we say. It was the way that people courted men and women, right? Okay, so I thought you might like, thank you so much. I could use a little drink. Okay, so over time, even our first president, Washington, when he was only 16 years old, wrote 110 good manners. The book was called The Rules of Civility and Decent Behavior in Company and Conversation. And he has 110 of them. And I just chose a couple of them here because he believed in every action done in company ought to be with some sign of respect to those who are present. And isn't that what etiquette is about? The 10th rule is when you sit down. And by the way, the book does have these capital letters as you're seeing on the screen. So don't think that I had a little typo. But he wanted, that was his way of emphasizing certain words. When you sit down, keep your feet firm and even without putting one or on the other or crossing them. You know, the one thing I always tell kids is that don't start putting your feet around the front legs. You know, kids are always kind of wrapping their legs around the legs of it or crossing your legs. None of that should be. But overall, you're sitting at the dining table pretty much with both feet flat on the floor, with your back away from the back of the chair, so that the end result is that you have good posture sitting up straight, out and down, and you can be close enough to the table to put both your wrists on the table. So never should you have your back to the table. And it says, if others talk at table, be attentive, but talk not with meat in your mouth. So in essence, don't talk with your mouth full. So if you ever have a chance to get a copy of the book, they are fascinating. They talk about all kinds of different things that are everyday etiquette things that we do today. It's just said in a different way. So I thought one of the questions I often get when I'm talking about dining with knives and forks is, how did it become a custom where, you know, we have one style here in the U.S. that we call the American style, or loosely called the zigzag style, and we have another one called the European continental, or the, and now I'm calling the global style. So how did this all come about? So if you'll indulge me for about two more minutes, I'll kind of give you my perspective of the history of all this, which started, of course, from the caveman eating with the hands and inventing the knife, inventing the spoon. 1500s, we got the knife and the fork together. And we always generally say knife and fork, not fork and knife, because a knife preceded the fork in terms of how they were invented. Okay, so everyone throughout Europe ate with their knife and fork in a style where you held it in the right hand, switched it to cut food, and switched back to continue eating. Made sense, because most people's hands were dominantly right-handed. So if this was the 1500s when this was first invented, what year did Christopher Columbus hop off the boat here? Anybody remember their history? 1492, he sailed the ocean blue. Terrific. Okay, so that preceded the invention of the fork. All the new colonists came here, still eating with their knife, spoon, and hands. New colonists started coming over here after the invention of the fork, bringing their own forks. Because in those days, taverns and restaurants, well, not restaurants, but the taverns, didn't provide them. They would even bring them, bring their own on belt loops and tie them on their belt loops, or have portable ones that they would bring. So when the new colonists here saw all those newfangled forks, they said, those are so cool. We better get a shipload of them there forks, you know. So they got a whole shipload, and looking at everybody else said, oh, that makes sense. Eat with the right and then switch to cut and continue eating. Everything was hunky-dory throughout the land until the late 1700s. Then a French nobleman wrote an etiquette book, and in it he said, ooh, I think it is totally uncouth and unrefined, that's the way they pronounced the word refined in those days, unrefined, that people should be seen switching their fork and knife back and forth, back and forth. I think it would be much better if you just kept the fork in the left, the knife in the right, and that way you can just cut, eat, and not be switching back and forth. Well, everyone in Europe thought this was the coolest thing. So they all switched, you know, and with no problem, because you remember, forks in those days were totally flat. It didn't matter if that two-pronged fork was facing this way or that way. It was identical. So it wasn't that big of a stretch for people to switch to this other style of dining. So everything was fine in Europe, everyone switched, to the point today, as we all know, that other style is totally extinct. There is no one here on Earth that remembers any time they ever used that other style, which was before the late 1700s. So, meanwhile, what happened on July 4th, 1776? Declaration of Independence. We finally gained our independence from the mother country. So when, again, colonists would come here to the United States of America and say, hey, man, you don't want to be dining that old-fashioned way. You got to get with it. My own style of speech. But you got to get with it. Got to get with the new style of dining of just keeping the fork on the left, keep the knife on the right, and just cut, eat, cut, eat. We looked at them and we said, we work so hard to gain our independence to have to not listen to you guys tell us what to do that now we like switching our hands back and forth. Thank you very much. So that's when, if anything, it became more the badge of honor among Americans. That if I was sitting in a tavern and looking across the room and you were eating, you know, with the fork on the left, knife in the right, I'd say, man, you are still sympathetic to the mother country. But you folks over here, you know, you're really true Americans because you're eating, you know, more the zigzag American style. So it's never been officially declared our style of eating, but yet over time did prevail to the point I have students that say, oh, yes, when my grandmother came from Poland after World War II, they all switched to the American style of eating because they wanted to be true Americans. It has gone on for a number of generations. However, I'm here to say in the 21st century, I don't think it's any longer, you know, needed or valid. To the extent the opposite holds true. I think learning the continental global form of dining is the way to go because this is the way everyone else dines. If you know world history, the 1800s thereafter was the time that Europe was the world dominating power. That's when the British went to Asia and Africa and the Spanish went to South America to conquer South America. You got the Germans going to Asia. You got the French going to Southeast Asia, Africa, and other places. So whatever, wherever they went throughout the world, when they brought knives and forks, the only way they taught the natives how to eat was that new, so-called new style with the fork in the left and knife in the right. There was no other style. It was a non-entity, any other thought of eating any other way. So that's how it has prevailed to this day. So that is, again, why any American, if you know of students that have gone on exchange programs or any of you who have traveled the world and you've seen other people dining with the knife and fork, they're predominantly doing it the continental style of keeping the fork in the left and the knife in the right. So let's talk a little bit about that. Oh, by the way, people have also asked me, well, why is it that our forks are so curved? That wasn't not Americanization. It's when the colonists rebelled that they then started to put three prongs on our forks and gave it a little curve so that we could be eating more comfortably with our right hand the way most of us do today. So that was kind of an American invention that did in a way stick even throughout Europe. If you look on my back display, I have more of a European style fork. So the main difference with European style versus American, you'll see that the tines are much longer on European style forks, and they're only slightly curved, not, you know, dramatically curved like many American forks are. So that's the difference, that it still maintains a very easy method to eat with the fork turned down. Okay? Yes.
I'd like to remind our listening audience that this is a program with the Commonwealth Club of California, and you're listening to Dining Practices Around the World with Cindy Seed, author of Advanced Etiquette.
Okay. So, after all of this, the late 1700s, going through the 1800s, it wasn't until the Victorian era, as named for Queen Victoria, who was the longest reigning monarch in British history, unless Queen Elizabeth outlives her, and she only has 4 years, and I think she'll make it, don't you? You know, so, but she, being the first woman as well, she started bringing in all kinds of more social affairs to Buckingham Palace, which had not ever been used before as much because it's a little ways out of the city. And it was a time of great prosperity throughout Europe, in through the U.S., and throughout the world. And as a result of that, and people were able to afford knives and forks and things of that nature much better, to the point they started inventing all kinds of knives and forks, as you see on the screen. They practically invented a implement for almost any major food you would want to eat, because historically, before stainless steel was invented, they were primarily made out of pewter. Pewter is a very porous, soft metal. So God forbid you're eating your fish, of course, and all of a sudden you're going to eat your wonderful beef and all that. You don't want all that fishy taste on it. So you have to have a different knife and fork for that, and so forth and so on, for your melons and for your shrimp cocktails and all of that. So, along with the 1900s, a number of etiquette books were started to come on the scene. This one came from Hills, who was in London, and he wrote over 100 different volumes of etiquette. And they were very specific. I meant to bring my copy of one, but forgot. But it's what anyone really wants an etiquette to be like. Literally a step-by-step guide to doing anything and everything. How you call on somebody, how you do dine at the table, how you set the table. I mean, he was just really great. And he started introducing, as you see here, much more illustrations that really started depicting what to do properly or not. So Hills is a great resource if you can get yourself a copy of it. Then along the from 1900 and 1950, the most popular etiquette things were from the Goops. You can still get volumes of this on Amazon.com. So it's the first poem that I quoted you that I love. They have poems on how little boys should treat little girls and not pulling on their curls. And you'll be very happy at the end of the day for not doing it in your whole life. It's really wonderful. Okay, so how many of you dine on a regular basis? You would say the more American style. We're fork in the right, switch, cut, switch back. That's terrific. Okay. Is there anyone here that does dine more on a regular basis, that continental style, global style? Oh, great. And a few of you didn't raise your hands. So what does that mean? Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about how we do dine properly with flatware. Would everybody just take one of your chopsticks, hold it in your hand, in the right hand, you could do it in the left hand again, as a soup spoon. So you know you hold it like this, you're not holding it like this or like that, okay? And when you're eating soup by the Western method, it's like little boats set out to sea. I eat my soup away from me, right? So you're going away from you, lift up, and eat from the side of the spoon. So you're just tilting the spoon and tilting it into your mouth. You don't eat, in fine dining, you never eat from the head on for soup. That's only for chunky soup, and that's fine. But in a fine dining restaurant, you'll never get that. So it's pretty much a rectangle. Cross, up, in. Down, cross, up, in. And people have often asked me, oh, in fact, I got an email this morning from a young man. I did a dining seminar last Saturday for a group, and he wrote me, I saw this morning. He's very tall, he's over 6 foot, and he was saying, you know, how close or how far can I sit, and can I lean a little bit in, because I don't want to spill on my tie, but yet I'm not sure. So I haven't written him back, but my suggestion is that you do, in fact, in the military, if you're at West Point, you have to sit at attention. You may look at down at the soup, but the main thing, my tip for you is never fill your soup spoon to the brim. You only fill it like 7/8 to the top. For all you mathematicians, if you have too much, you'll tilt it and spill some of it out. You'll flick it once or twice, and you'll be able to lift it up and then eat. And you'll have no problem eating soup. So when you get down to the bottom of the soup, you'll tilt the bowl away from you to get the last parts. But, of course, you will never scrape and make loud noises with that. Okay. Number of other areas of soup eating. What are some of the other no-nos? We've got about 5 minutes more. What are some of the other no-nos we have on soup eating? Not picking up the bowl and drinking out of it. That would be totally appropriate if you were in a Japanese restaurant. But in Western culture, no, you leave the plate on the table. So what else? What if the soup is too hot? What have you done in the past? Blow on it, so no more blowing. Sometimes people even scrape the spoon. Oh, no, not when it's too hot. Yeah, they'll blow on it or they'll stir the soup, right? So neither of these should be done. Instead, if it's too hot, I say adhere to that 7/8 rule. Hold that spoonful of soup and count 1,001, 1,002, 1,003. Usually by 3,000, it's cool enough that you can then lift it up and eat it. Okay, but I gave away the other one. What happens if you, in the past when you filled the spoon too much? What have you done? Remember, I said scraping the side of the bowl. No more scraping. So now you know you're just tilting it to spill some of it out so you don't get all that side of the bowl all dirty. Okay, and lastly, for gentlemen, what are you going to do with your tie when you've when you're eating soup or anything else? What are you going to do with it? Yes? I think I saw you do it. Yeah, you stuff it into your shirt or you flick it in the back of your shoulder, right? Nah, none of that anymore. Instead, you're going to lift it up and hold it in front of your chest with your other hand, okay, so it would be my left hand, and then with your right hand, you'll adhere to the first three or four bites of eating your soup to that 7/8 rule and so forth and focus. Don't be so chatty during those first three or four bites, and you'll learn the consistency of the soup, so then you can continue on. So overall, you know, those are pretty much it. Yes, sir. Great question. Dunking bread in your soup is a wonderful pastime. And I'm a believer in not ever, I try very hard never to say no, absolutely no to something. So it's never what you do, but how you do it. Right. So you'll tear that one bite of bread off, typically no bigger than a crouton size. You'll put it into your soup, but then you'll take your spoon and get it all wet. And then you'll fish it up with the spoon and eat it. So you're not going to use your fingers and slosh it around the bowl and eat from your fingers. That's the main thing to remember. Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, so now we have the European style of eating, as you see here. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, sir. Oh, when you're... That's great. Okay, that's getting into table manners indeed. There's two ways of placing your spoon at the end of eating soup. If you have a soup bowl, and I'm not going to go back there, but you have a soup bowl or a cup, it typically should be accompanied by a saucer. You will then leave it in the saucer. The opposite is true for eating out of a soup plate, which is more like what we have on the screen here. A soup plate, however, regardless of whether it has a saucer or not, the spoon remains in the plate. And the end result is actually at what they call a 10-20 position. I think I might have a, well, maybe not, a picture of it. But you put the bulb of the spoon at 10 o'clock and the handle is at 20 past. And the reason being is that we've heard historically proper service is you serve from the left and take from the right. So when the server comes and takes from the right, he can secure that spoon with his thumb much easier than having that spoon fly all around.
You said soup plate.
Yes.
You mean a
yes.
A bowl?
It is a flatter bowl, and I will continue talking while I'm actually walking and showing everybody the differences between the two. Okay. All righty. So a lot of soup bowls were like, this is a soup plate. Okay, it's flatter. Okay, everybody see that? Okay, that's all right. And then we have a soup bowl or a soup cup, which is even smaller. So that's the difference. Mm-hmm. So, all righty. I just realized I'm kind of starting to run out of time. Okay, so everybody, real quickly, would you please take your one chopstick in your left hand? We're doing the top image, both of them in the palm of your hand. Great. Now I want you to flip it over, and basically in your left hand, where the tine meets the handle is where you've got one index finger in the left hand. And in the right hand, where the blade meets the handle, is your right hand. More like that. And basically, in this style of dining, all you do is cut, eat, cut, eat. You will never switch hands. In between bites, as I'm chewing or even I could talk to somebody else, my wrists are resting comfortably on the edge of the table. Okay? So that's that. And overall, you'll see here she has both her fork and the spoon knife in a crisscross or a diagonal. This is called the inverted V, And that's kind of a resting position. And in the European style of dining, both hands remain on top of the table throughout the entire meal. So God forbid that a difference is with American style, you're supposed to keep your left hand under the table. This style, more historically accurate, you never want your hand under the table. God forbid somebody has a weapon. You're going to shoot somebody or stab somebody. Nowadays, God forbid you're holding hands with your sweetheart or somebody else's sweetheart, you know? So you want to always keep your hands on top of the table. And then the upper left corner shows more the American style, that at the end of a meal, you'll see that both your fork and the knife is diagonal, again, at 10 o'clock and 20 past, and you may put your hands on your lap in between courses. So that's a major difference, but honestly, I would practice and don't even think about putting your hands on your lap. You know, it took me a while, but I got it now, and I feel very comfortable with it. So,
what about in a restaurant when you're finished eating? Do you turn the fork over?
Okay, when in a restaurant, while you're eating, do you turn your fork over? Well, depends. There is no real turning over because if I'm eating with my fork in my left hand with the tines down anyway, there is no turning over. I just close it up and put it down in that 10-20 position. And if I was eating the American style, which had the fork turned up in my right hand, and then I put my knife and fork in the 10-20 position finished, it would be up. So, yeah, either way. But it's not literally turning it over. Real quickly, all the don'ts that are pretty prevalent in all styles of dining is obviously no slouching or crossing your legs. In all cultures, it's not appropriate to cross legs at the dining table. You were talking about napkins. When is it the appropriate time or not appropriate time to put your napkin on your lap? It's basically you gotta wait for the host to put his or her napkin on their lap before you do it. I mean, that's the beginning of a series of silent signals that's telling the servers when they can start serving the meal. So God forbid you sit down and immediately you put your napkin on your lap. What are you saying to everybody else at the table? I think I heard it. What did you say? Yes, I'm hungry. I don't care about anybody else. So to me, that's one of the worst table manners you could do. And reference, somebody else had a question about talking about napkins. Oh, I know what. You were talking about where you leave your napkin in the middle of a meal. Who has the answer to that one? Real quick. Chair? Where else? Any place else? On the table? Where on the table? Next to you? One side or the other is actually the left. If you're going to put it on the table, it is to the left. Of course, the servers will put it on the back of the chair and the arm of the chair and so forth, and I know it's 7 o'clock. Leave the chair. Oh, you know what really is a pet peeve of mine, even a lot of things, is how people leave a dining room table at the end of the meal and they don't push the chair back in under the table. It's such a simple thing. But please, that's one of my top 8. Obviously, elbows on the table, talking with your mouth full, chewing with your mouth open and making noise. Not a good thing in the Western culture, opposite of Chinese and Asian. And pushing your plate away, as in Middle Eastern countries, and saying, burp, you know, saying the meal was so delicious. You know, I just can't eat another bite. Not to be done in a fine dining Western style. So, those are my top 8 of dining etiquette. There's so much, like I said, more we can talk about. But the only thing, last item I thought I'd mention is on toasting practices, because it is something that is done globally in every culture. And as Linda was saying, one of my most fun clients was Miss Universe, and she got toasted 365 days of the year, right? So I had to teach her how to receive and give toasts. And my very first Miss Universe, actually, are you from India? Oh, okay. Close, okay. She was Miss Sushmita Sen. She, so you know of her. She became a very famous actress in India. Okay, so for a host, It is always good that you propose a toast at the onset of any meal, whether it's business, even the two among two people. You just raise your water glass and say, "Great to have you. I'm so glad you were able to be my guest for the lunch today. May this be the beginning of years of great, you know, business together," or whatever. Bon appetit. So very simple. However, if you have a guest of honor, it's typically done at the end and along with dessert, and typically before you eat the dessert. Not after, okay? So it's after the champagne is poured and maybe as the dessert's being served, if it's so big, but before. And the reason, by the way, you propose a toast at the beginning of a meal is that in most cultures, unless the host proposes one, nobody else can. You'd be kind of overshadowing the host if you started proposing toast before he did, okay? And, of course, again, different cultures, you practically toast with every bite, as in Russia, you know, bite, vodka, you know. So that can be a lot of fun, too. In order to complete a toast, everyone must raise your glass, make good eye contact with the person, the subject of the toast, perhaps the honoree, say some nice cheers, you know, happy birthday, whatever, and take a sip. If you haven't done any of that, you haven't consummated the toast, okay? And different things in Asia is that we do things with both hands to show the most, you know, respect and reverence. But the other thing, too, even if you did toast with one hand, be sure not to ever hold your cup higher than the host, higher than your elders. You would always want to defer down. And what's really fun is when you're somewhat with peers, you start going down, 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 you know, because the other person is trying to show their humility and not, you know, being higher than you. So the honoree typically will remain seated when they are the subject of a toast, even if the host stands. But the main thing you got to remember is honorees don't pick up your glass and toast along with everybody else, because it's like toasting yourself. So you just sit there quietly, not quietly maybe, but, you know, you're looking at everybody and you're going, thank you, you know, kind of like that, and making lovely thanks to everyone who's toasting you. But immediately following, that's the turn for the guest of honor to then, if the host stood, you stand. If you remain seated, you remain seated, and return the host, thanking the host for organizing this wonderful event on your behalf and saying something nice about the event, no more than 1 minute, and then proposing a toast again to everyone, thanking everyone and all for being here today. By the way, if any of you have heard of a little small website called YouTube, you can go on there and type in my name correctly. You have my card, and it'll pull up a series of 6 videos. 3 of them are on dining. 1 of them is on toasting practices, so you can see all of that kind of more smoothly. All righty. So, any one question, because I hate being so over time. I know everyone's got places to go and things to see. That's okay. That's okay. I'm used to it. Yes?
I mean, it's not hugely relevant to everyone, but I had a question. So why do Americans eat French fries with their hands, and typically Europeans eat them with forks?
Well, then you could, the question was, why do typically Americans eat French fries with their hands, and Europeans eat with a fork? And it will be the same answer as why Italians eat pizza with a knife and fork and not with their hands, which we do. It is just a part of our culture, I guess, that overall in Europe and other parts of the world, the trend or the etiquette really is not to eat anything with their fingers. They think when you're eating with your fingers, it's like you're going back to the Dark Ages and becoming like a barbarian, to the point if you did eat things with your hands, you only use maybe your 2 fingers, maximum 3 fingers, like eating ribs and things like that, or fried chicken, any of those things. Anytime you start using the 4th and the 5th finger, you're really considered a barbarian. I mean, so there's the perception of eating with your hands as well. Someone was asking about the pacing of meals. Overall, it's comfortably as everyone at the table has finished each course. So you have to keep pace. For those fast eaters, when you're down to your last two bites, come to a screeching halt, put your knife and fork in that resting position and have some more wine, water, bread, and make conversation till you see everybody else is kind of down to their last two bites. The slow eaters, at the point you see everyone is down to their last two bites, you got to make a quick decision. Am I going to gobble it up or forget it? So you know the answer to that one. So, and hosts, never go to your own party hungry. So, because you're the most chatty, eat something beforehand. And lastly, about Japan, the only thing I would say, Japan has a real high style of dining, to the point they have certain little phrases such as itadakimasu for a beginning of a meal or gochisousama and things like that. But other than that, the chopsticks of how you use them will be the same. There is a style of how you pick up chopsticks in your right. You'll steady them with your left, and then you'll put them back in your right. So it's always a right-left-right situation in picking them up. It's not like Chinese. They just pick them up with the right and just use them. So there is a little bit of a ritual with that, with the Japanese. And if you want more on that, I'm happy to send it to you. But I think I will leave it at that. So let me wrap up by saying that all of these things are really fun to think about. Success or failure is caused by your mental attitude, then your mental capacity. So for all of you who have not had as much experience using, say, chopsticks or eating with your hands or even dining with knives and forks properly, I encourage you to go home, have some fun, you know, and really practice. To the point that Linda mentioned earlier that I do have an etiquette tip of the month e-newsletter. If anyone wants to pass this around and so inclined, I'll give one side and then start one with this side. Sign up. I will even send you a copy of these slides that you can have. Okay. So it's what you learn after you know it all that counts, right? It's not what you know, but how well you know and display it. That overall, we are what we repeatedly do. Excellence, then, is not an act, but a habit. And when it comes to eating and dining, we have the best resource to make this be a perfect skill for all of us. Because unlike any other skill you'll ever learn in your life, we have to eat every day. So why not, you know, take the next month or so and dedicate it to yourself to have fun really getting this stuff down pat. Because once you do it for 100 days, I guarantee it will be habit. No different than brushing your teeth. You could stay out all night, have an hour's worth of sleep before going to work, get up, crawl into the bathroom, pull out that toothbrush, and you'll be able to brush your teeth properly without even thinking about it, right? So I hope the same thing for you when you're using any of these methods of dining. So once you change your attitude, you change your performance, you change your behavior. Once you change your performance, you do change your life. So I hope even in this last hour I've changed your life just a little bit with a few new tips, because the homework is all yours. Anytime those thoughts come, gremlins and all of that come into view, they become words like, oh, who cares? Nobody eats that way. None of my friends do it or my family, so why should I? I'll only think about doing it when I have to really go out on a date or a business lunch. So you got to watch your actions. They become habits. Habits become part of your character. Character becomes a part of your destiny. So with all of that in mind, I always say happy practicing to everyone. And thank you so much.
Thank you, Cindy, author of Advanced Etiquette, for her comments here today. We also thank our audiences here, as well as those listening to the recording and now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating its 112th year of enlightened discussion, is adjourned. Thank you.